It's Friday, May 21st. CBC's ombudsman accused Conservative Party campaign manager Doug Finley of using paranoid-tinged language to tarnish the CBC's image and to raise money for the Conservative Party. Currently, and yes, Doug Finley, you're welcome. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Current. I'm Erica Johnson in Vancouver.
Tuwanga Chimbalenga and Stephen Monjeza begin serving 14 years of hard labor today. They are the first gay couple to be convicted under Malawi's harsh anti-homosexual law. Specifically, they were convicted of gross indecency and unnatural acts. The charges stem from a commitment ceremony the two held last December, and their case has sparked international condemnation. But the government of Malawi is standing by the law, the conviction, and the sentence imposed on them. Peter Tatchell has been supporting Tuwanga Chimbalenga and Stephen Monjeza. He's a longtime human rights campaigner and a member of the gay rights group Outrage. He's in London, England. Hello.
Greetings.
So what's your reaction to the sentence?
It's a very cruel, vindictive, harsh sentence which tramples on Malawi's own constitution, which guarantees equal rights and non-discrimination. And, of course, it violates personal privacy, individual liberty, and reverses the country's commitment to human rights. Malawi is not long out of an era of dictatorship when personal prejudices of the dictator, Hastings Banda, determined law enforcement. And that seems to be what's happening here in this particular case. The personal prejudices and opinions of the judge and government ministers and indeed sections of the public have been allowed to override the principle of democracy and human rights, that every Malawian should be equal before the law. That is what the Malawi Constitution says.
Now, you've been in contact with these two men while they've been awaiting sentencing. Tell us a bit about them.
Both Stephen and Tuwanga are adamant that they love each other. They've never harmed anyone. Their relationship has been conducted in private, and that they should have a right to live their own life with dignity and respect. So they are very far-sighted, courageous, defiant individuals. Obviously, they are very shocked by this decision. It's the maximum sentence, and the judge could have easily given them 2 or 3 or 5 years, but he chose to give them the maximum. He had a bizarre reasoning that it was necessary to protect the public. Well, these two men love each other. There is no danger that they are any threat to the wider public in Malawi. It is a tribute to their tenacity and determination that they remain unbowed despite this cruel, crushing verdict and sentence.
And you have been in personal contact with them, advocating on their behalf. How have they been handling things, knowing that they would likely get 14 years in prison?
Well, life has been very, very difficult for them in prison. They've been held in Chiri Prison in Blantyre, Malawi, which is a notoriously squalid jail. Prisoners often die there from disease and neglect. The prison food is 2 meals a day of maize porridge with beans and water, and that's it. Many of the prisoners are suffering from malnutrition and from diseases related to inadequate diets. Tuberculosis and other infectious diseases are rife. Stephen himself has been very seriously ill for the last few months. He's not been receiving proper treatment. I fear that both these men could die in prison. 14 years could be a death sentence.
And yet going into the sentencing, they were saying that reaffirming their love for one another and saying that life would not be worth living, that they may as well go to prison if they can't be together.
Both men have not allowed the hatred and vilification they've suffered at the hands of the sections of the Malawian public to crush them. They are also very aware that there are some Malawians who do support them.
Well, how much of this was a political move on their part? How much of it was politics to highlight the discrimination towards gay people in Malawi?
prior to their arrest, both Stephen and Tuwonge were not political. They decided to hold their engagement ceremony, their traditional engagement ceremony, because they loved each other. It wasn't a political statement. It was just an affirmation of their love and commitment to each other.
You know, been Why was it to, such a public commitment, knowing how harshly it would be received in their country?
Well, they didn't know it would be so harshly received, because there's no law against a same-sex engagement ceremony. You know, that's not illegal in Malawi. You know, they have been arrested on false pretenses, and this is the outrageous element of the case. The laws and constitution of Malawi have been consistently violated by the police and by the judiciary. They were arrested following their traditional African engagement ceremony. That ceremony is not unlawful, but they were nevertheless arrested and charged with homosexual acts. When it came to the evidence, there was no credible evidence that they had committed any illegal same-sex acts. All the prosecution had was a partial confession which followed many days of beatings and threats and abuse.
In a moment, we're going to speak with the information minister from Malawi. What would you say to him?
I would appeal to the government of Malawi to uphold its own constitution. Article 20 is categorically clear. It states that every Malawian citizen is entitled to equal treatment and is protected against discrimination. Everyone should be equal before the law, and the only role for the criminal law is to protect people against harm. Quite clearly, private same-sex relations between consenting adults do not harm anyone, and therefore, in a liberal democratic society, they should not be criminalized.
All right, Peter Tatchell, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Peter Tatchell is a longtime human rights campaigner and a member of the gay rights group Outrage. Now, despite the criticism from abroad, the government of Malawi is standing by the ruling. Leckford Mwanza Toto is Malawi's information minister, and he's in the capital, Lilongwe. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Tell us about the sentence handed out to Tuwongo Chimbalanga and Stephen Monjeza. They got 14 years?
That's the ruling, yes.
Are you pleased with the sentence?
As a government, we always respect the judgment of the courts. So it's not a question of whether we are pleased or what, but we just respect the ruling from the court.
These two took part in a commitment ceremony. They didn't legally get married. What laws did they actually break?
In Malawi, it's a taboo. Same-sex marriage is a taboo. It's not accepted. Our laws do not accept this. They are not recognized. Our religion does not condone same-sex marriage. So what I can say is traditionally, our culture sees this as a taboo. It's not accepted. Our religion does not accept. So that is what I got to say.
So if the laws don't allow same-sex marriage, these two didn't get married. They took part in a commitment ceremony. Why are they being prosecuted then?
The evidence is that they were engaged in those activities.
When were these laws banning homosexuality or same-sex marriage, when were those laws made in Malawi?
I think it's some years ago, but a long period.
As I understand it, they were introduced or imposed by Britain some time ago, but today neither Britain nor other Commonwealth countries like Canada prosecute buggery or homosexuality. Why is it still worthy of prosecution in Malawi?
Our tradition, our culture, as well as our religion, and as well as the laws. So it's not only the laws, but our tradition and the culture. It's a taboo. It cannot be condoned. It's not tolerated in Malawi. Religiously, it's not accepted. So, despite that, the laws are very odd, but culturally and traditionally, it's also a taboo.
Well, if HIV can be spread through homosexual sex, there is a concern that people aren't going to be seeking treatment because they won't be wanting to admit that they've engaged in that sex because it is now a criminal act. How do you respond to that?
But in the first case, if gayism is not accepted and allowed in Malawi, and I think that argument falls off.
So you just say being gay in Malawi is not accepted?
Yeah, it's not accepted. Yeah, that is just backed up by the court ruling.
This verdict has received international condemnation, as you are aware. 40% of your development budget comes from overseas. Are there concerns that international aid could be suspended over this?
It's up to the donors to weigh the two. Whether they give us aid because we accept the same-sex marriage, or whether they refuse us aid because we are against this idea, it's up to them. They have to balance the two.
Are you concerned about the international reaction to this ruling?
It's a concern. You also have to understand our situation, the situation we are in.
Some say that it's a situation, though, that could be changed, that under Article 20 of your country's constitution, it outlaws discrimination. The Malawi Law Society is saying that article outlawing discrimination is being violated.
By the way, have you ever been in Malawi?
No, I have not.
Maybe if you had come here in Malawi, maybe if you had traveled and learned our culture, our tradition, our religion, maybe you would have understood our situation better, because to you now, it's more or less like a theory.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your perspective.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Lekford Mwanza Toto is Malawi's Minister of Information. Well, Malawi isn't the only country in Africa with harsh anti-homosexuality laws. Last year, Uganda put forward a bill that would allow for the death penalty for people convicted of homosexual acts. So, for a sense of where gay rights are in jeopardy and where progress is being made, we're joined this morning by Barry Adam. He's a professor in the Department of Sociology, Anthropology, and Criminology at the University of Windsor, and he specializes in gay and lesbian studies. He's in Toronto. Hello.
Hello.
How surprised were you at the sentence given to Tuwongo Chimbalanga and Stephen Mongeza?
Well, one can only wish that it didn't happen. It's a confirmation of a British colonial law. As you mentioned previously, it's a law we did have at one time in Canada, but we got rid of a couple, decade or so ago. So it's disturbing.
We heard the information minister just say that this was about upholding Malawi's laws, the culture and religion. What do you make of that argument?
Well, there's certainly a wide range of views on same-sex relationships across Africa. It's a complex, multinational continent, and it ranges from South Africa, which is close by, to Malawi, which does have same-sex marriage, one of the few countries like Canada, to the instances of Uganda and Malawi, and there's been some recent mob violence in Kenya as well, directed against people suspected of being gay and based simply on the rumor that they may have had a commitment ceremony as well.
So in some cases, it's simply conviction based on rumor. Which countries is this happening? Which countries are the worst in Africa?
Well, it's often hard to make large generalizations because clearly there is debate and ferment happening in a number of African societies. A lot of that is happening in former British colonies that do have sodomy laws. We see a lot less of this in Francophonie, for example, in West Africa, where the French never had anti-gay laws, and they remain relatively peaceable on these issues right now.
Well, what is the history there? Because you mentioned that these are largely former British laws that these are based on. What is the tribal history of tolerance of same-sex partnerships?
Well, it's highly variable because there are a great many different cultures throughout Africa. The historical and anthropological record shows that there have been and continue to be some societies that welcome and celebrate same-sex relationships. In some societies of West Africa and South Africa, women of wealth and status are permitted and do take wives. And there's good evidence for same-sex relationships on the mentor-acolyte model in Central Africa. And so it's a very mixed picture.
So what's a mentor-acolyte model?
Well, that's something that we know in the West through the ancient Greeks. That is, it's typically a relationship between a younger and older man, sometimes in a military context between soldiers.
Okay. You mentioned South Africa. They have a large and very open gay and lesbian community. What is different there?
Well, what's different is that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered movement was one of the partners in the anti-apartheid struggle. So one of the heroes of that struggle was Simon Nkoli, who is an out gay man who suffered a number of years in prison as part of that anti-apartheid struggle. And when the ANC came to power, there was, shall we say, a rehabilitation of the status of gay and lesbian people in that country. And that's a pattern we see in other places as well. Something similar happened in Spain. And Spain, of course, is another one of the countries that has same-sex marriage today.
Getting back to Malawi, the sentence imposed was 14 years of hard labor. There was flexibility in that sentence. We heard it could have been much less, 2 years, three, 5 years. Why do you think the punishment was so harsh?
It's hard to know the specifics in that case, but we are seeing some influence by fundamentalist Christians, often from the U.S., who have been going to countries like Uganda and Malawi and whipping up considerable opposition to scapegoats like gay and lesbian people in those countries, sometimes in association with the more extreme end of Islam as well.
What about other parts of the world? Where are we seeing progress being made?
Well, there's a lot of bright spots. We're seeing a lot of equality legislation occurring throughout Latin America. Mexico City and Buenos Aires, for example, have brought in same-sex relationship recognition. The president of Brazil has declared an anti-homophobia day and put considerable state resources behind anti-homophobia education. Of course, the European Union has a strong human rights record and an increasing membership, and that is has pretty much brought all of Europe in line with equality rights. And we're starting to see gay and lesbian people around the world more and more speaking up for themselves. I think part of the globalization and influence of the internet, where it's more and more possible for people to find each other and communicate easily.
And what about here in North America?
Well, you know, just this week, the governor of Minnesota vetoed a bill passed by the Minnesota legislature to allow same-sex partners the right to medical decision-making when their partners are in hospital. And so that's rather close to home and a rather basic step that it has encountered opposition and actual veto by a U.S. governor. And 40 of the 50 U.S. states do have so-called DOMA legislation, that is defense of marriage legislation, which bans same-sex marriage and in some cases adds that to state constitutions and even prevents any form of same-sex relationship recognition, including another of our neighbors of Michigan.
So do you think we are moving forward or not?
Well, there's I think worldwide there is a forward movement of increasing relationship or recognition, I should say, even embrace of LGBT populations and a recognition of their place in the larger diversity of cultures. So And we've seen a movements towards marriage. Of course, there are five countries now that do recognize same-sex relationships, and it's in the works in a number of others.
All right, Barry Adam, thanks for talking to me this morning.
Thank you.
Barry Adam is a professor in the Department of Sociology, Anthropology, and Criminology at the University of Windsor.
Well, that's it for this podcast. You can listen to The Current weekday mornings on CBC Radio 1 right after the 8:30 news, 9 in Newfoundland and Labrador, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. If you have any thoughts on what you're hearing on The Current, send us your comments. Visit our website at cbc.ca/thecurrent and click on Contact Us. Or you can call our feedback line toll-free at 1-877-287-7366. You can also find us on Twitter at The Current CBC or find our fan page on Facebook by searching CBC Radio The Current. Thanks for listening to The Current Podcast. I'm Erica Johnson in Vancouver.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.